Good morning and welcome to this month's Hancock Horizon Investments Economic Update Call. We provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockbank.com and he'll take them at the end of the call. On today's call, we have investment directors David Lundgren, Luther McDougall, Jeffrey Tangus, and Greg Hileski. With that, I'll give the call over to David Lundgren, who will be the moderator.
Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of our monthly economic and market update call. And Luther, we'll start with you this morning. Last week, we had a pretty disappointing first quarter GDP print. The number was disappointing at 0.2%. It was disappointing in nominal terms, but also versus expectations. I think the market consensus was the number would come in somewhere around 1%. And it's kind of interesting. This is 2 years in a row where we've had a pretty disappointing first quarter. It started to feel like we were turning the corner. And I guess we had a bit of a setback here with this first quarter number. Give us your thoughts regarding that.
Yeah, right. As you mentioned, the first quarter came in relatively weak at 0.2%. The consensus expectation had been for GDP to grow around 1%. Now, all of this is in the context that in the fourth quarter of last year, GDP grew at 2.2%. There were a number of factors that did impact GDP in the first quarter. Some of these were temporary or, if you will, transitory, and others will be continued constraints on GDP going forward. But we all know that during the first quarter, same as last year, we had some bad weather in the upper Midwest and in the Northeast, to a lesser extent in other parts of the country. But it was enough to put a damper in spending, construction, and any number of other industries that are exposed to the weather. We also had some constraints from the delays at the West Coast ports. We all saw in the news the pictures of all the cargo or container ships lined up outside the ports like San Francisco or Los Angeles, waiting to be unloaded. And it works both ways, waiting to be unloaded and waiting to be loaded to go back out. So we saw a reduced sales impact there, both domestically and abroad. Those two factors hopefully were temporary. We don't expect, of course, or we can't predict that the weather will be like in this quarter, but we know we won't get a lot of snow. And then the West Coast port, although it's still an issue, it's much less so, and the the issues out there have been solved, but there is still a little bit of a backlog. Other factors that impacted first quarter GDP were the decline in oil prices. Oil is still substantially down from its highs. We saw the impact in layoffs from a number of the oil service companies and others that are involved in the industry. We also saw a pretty large reduction in capital spending, particularly in the first quarter. That part of capital spending that related to the mining industry or mining and energy industries fell by about 10% in the quarter, or an annualized rate of near 50%. So there was a huge impact on capital spending. Other anecdotal evidence is that Halliburton announced a few weeks ago that they're going to reduce their overall capital spending by 15% for the total year. So not only was there harsh winter weather, the delays at the West Coast ports and decline in oil prices, but we also had to contend with another factor, and that is the strong dollar. The dollar was up approximately 20%, or is up about 20% from its June lows of last year. And that had a pretty big impact on overall GDP growth. It actually subtracted 1.25% from the first quarter, as we're no longer as competitive as we were when the dollar was at lower levels. So there were four pretty good factors that impacted first quarter GDP, two that are going away, and two that should still impact going forward, but to a lesser extent. Now, this morning, we got some new numbers on the trade deficit, and the trade deficit last month was $35 billion, or negative $35 billion, and this month it was expected to be a minus $42 billion. That number of the expectation was built into first quarter GDP. The actual trade deficit number came in at a $51 billion negative number, which means that first quarter GDP, in all likelihood, will be revised negative at the next announcement.
A few follow-up questions here. One, in our past meetings, we've talked about declining oil prices as maybe being a lift to the consumer. And you think that might have shown up in the GDP numbers, but it sounds like it was more of a negative. Any thoughts regarding that? You know, how did this consumer do during the quarter?
Actually, consumer spending in the quarter was up about 1.9%, less than it was in the fourth quarter, but still relatively strong. So consumer spending is there. Strong is probably not the right word, but moderate. Consumer spending is still there, but it was dramatically impacted in the first quarter.
It just wasn't enough to offset some of the drags, or maybe it was kind of a wash
It was not quite strong enough to offset the say the 1.25% from the strong dollar and the declines attributable to the oil services industry.
Okay, and a lot of times when economic numbers that are released, they always talk about them being seasonally adjusted. I know GDP is supposedly seasonally adjusted, but it seems like the last 2 years, is weather not part of that equation? Can you touch on that a little bit? Is it?
I think the agencies responsible for coming up with GDP have done their best to seasonally adjust the numbers. But I think when you talk about seasonally adjusting, it's for normal seasonal adjustments, not for the really bad weather we've had the last two quarters. Trying to build that in is questionable at best. I don't think that weather is a part of the seasonal adjustment, not at least to the extent that we've been impacted in the last two years.
And you know, one thing that we saw last year, when we had that really difficult first quarter, there was a lot of pent-up demand, and we had a real strong second quarter print, where a lot of that temporary halt in activity due to weather we doubled up in the second quarter. And I know we're only 1 month into the second quarter, but early indications, do we see somewhat of a repeat?
Yes, I think we'll see a repeat of last year where the second quarter bounces back from the first quarter. As I mentioned just a few minutes ago, consumer spending, although it only rose 1.9% in quarter one, which was weather constrained, the March number was much better than the February number, so at least on a very short-term basis, the numbers are turning up, but I believe that there is pent-up demand out there. We also saw towards the end of the quarter that home sales were picking up a little bit. They're still not strong, but they were positive in Q1. They added to GDP, so that's a little bit of a tailwind that we've got, that and consumer spending picking up. We've also seen a change in the labor market, not to a great extent, but we've seen, like last week, for example, the unemployment claims fell to a level not seen since April of 2000. The job openings or the JOLTS list is now at a 14-year high, and we saw the number of continuing unemployment claims fall to the low of December 2000. So we've seen a lot of numbers come out good on the employment front. I mean, we still have issues with the participation rate, and the employment numbers are not growing where we'd really like to see them. But if we can get back into that 200,000, 250,000 per month after last month's 126,000, we should have a tailwind from there also. And we've been talking about all the negative effects of the oil price. There is a positive effect, which we should begin to see more so in the second quarter as consumers get out and spend after being snowed in, if you will, for part of the first quarter. There is pent-up demand there. The savings rate is higher than it has been over the past few months, so we have some money to spend. So the second quarter GDP should be relatively strong. I'd say we're probably somewhere in the 2 to 3% range. If I had to pick a number, I'd say 2.5%, maybe even slightly stronger than that, but we're not going to see a 4% quarter. We still have the bad side of the oil equation that's going to continue to drag us down a little bit. And we still have a strong dollar, although it's fallen off about 5% from its highs. So the second quarter looks to be pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. A good rebound from the first quarter.
Okay. Thank you, Luther. And let's shift gears and talk a little bit about the stock market. And I would say it was an okay month. In April, the S&P 500 was up 1%. nothing overly exciting. We had a little bit of a turnaround. Small cap stocks were off to a good start in the first quarter of the year, and then we saw a little bit of a sell-off in April as small caps, as represented by the Russell 2000, were down 2.5%. Surprisingly, international had a good first quarter and remained very strong. They were international stocks were definitely the leader for the month. If you look at the ACWI, which is the All Country World Index X, the United States, it was up 5.1% for the month. So a really strong April for international stocks. Luther, why don't you break down those numbers a little bit more, and then we'll turn it over to Greg.
All right. Domestically, as you mentioned, the return for the month of April was 1% or 0.96%. So in 1 month, April, we've gained all that we had for the first the same amount as we gained in the first quarter of the year. For the first quarter, the S&P was up 0.95%. In April, we were up 0.96%. Now we're up 1.92% for the year to date. But during the month of April, it was an eclectic mix of outperformers versus underperformers. As you can imagine, with oil prices bouncing during the month of April, the best-performing sector was energy, up 6.65%. The second-best sector was telecommunications, continued merger talks. And then we had a bounce in the materials sector. Now, those are great numbers, but if you look at those three sectors added together, they're only 14% of the S&P 500. So something was amiss, as we only ended up 0.96%. Part of that was because of healthcare, where we've had a lot of mergers, and that's kind of cooled off a little bit. Healthcare was down 1.36%. Consumer staples were down 0.75%, and utilities were down 45 basis points. So a pretty mixed bag during the quarter, with some sectors, as I mentioned, representing only a very small part of the S&P 500, doing very well, hence the relatively low number. For the year to date, the best performing sector is still telecom, up 7.5%, followed by healthcare, as I mentioned, because of merger mania, and then consumer discretionary stocks are up 4.76%. The worst performing sector year to date, utilities down 5.5%, followed by financials down almost 2%, and then industrials down 1%. All of the other sectors are up, and one of the ones that had performed most poorly last year and kind of year to date up until last month was energy. It's now up 3.5% for the month to date. So it was a reasonably strong month in April, enough to double our return year to date, but numbers were all over the board.
Okay, thanks, Luther. Greg, you heard all the numbers. How about a little commentary, color around the month?
Yeah, well, we started out on a weak note because of the weaker manufacturing and or economic data, I should say, specifically manufacturing, and that rekindled concerns that the recovery may be faltering. Factories expanded at the slowest pace in March since May of 2013. We've also seen earnings estimates come down quite a bit, but strangely, the market's still at near all-time highs. One would expect that earnings don't rebound, that we would see the market adjust downward. As it was pointed out, international does well, which I think lends more credence to this theory that the liquidity programs actually do influence the stock market. Then the following week in April, we saw that stocks rise again with energy prices. Moreover, there were words from the Fed that interest rate increases would be shallow and that they would probably be on hold until September instead of June now. So that pushed things out, and that was positive for the stock market. Also, we saw some positive data about the service industries, which is a big component of the economy, and that the service industries are still holding up. So that was positive news on the recovery. Then mid-month, stocks sold off again, partly due to earnings disappointments, brief, in addition to core CPI moving up, implying that the Fed would begin to raise rates sooner. So it's been a real roller coaster of data throughout the whole month, 1 week positive, 1 week negative. Then towards the end of the month again, stocks began to climb towards the end of the month because of some positive earnings releases in the tech sector. I think it was Google and Amazon were came out with better earnings. And eventually, towards month end, I think right around the 28th, 27th, we saw stocks sell off again. And because of mixed economic data, which again clouded the whole outlook for what the Fed's going to do in terms of interest rate increases. I guess looking forward from this standpoint, it seems like the outlook for stocks, and I'm going to borrow the term that the Fed uses, that it's going to be largely data dependent on economic data, earnings data, and I think focused on, again, the Fed, when the Fed will begin to raise rates. I still do believe that, you know, any kind of increase is going to be minimal at best, because I just don't think that the recovery is strong enough to sustain a strong interest rate increase. It's just not there yet. We're just going to lump along like we have been for the last couple of years. But I think at least looking forward for the next couple of months, the stock market could be kind of a bumpy ride until the economic picture clears up.
Greg, you mentioned the Fed a couple times in your notes, and you know, obviously it has a major impact on all facets of what we discuss on these calls. It has an effect on the economy, obviously the stock market, the bond market. And I'm going to ask both Luther and Jeff to chime in. You heard Greg, you know, based on a lot of the comments made by Fed governors over the last few weeks, they really seem to be zeroing in on September. I'm going to ask you guys, do you think that is true? Are we finally going to see it happen? Is it, you know, it was June, you know, now it's looking like September. Do we really think it's going to happen? You also heard Greg mention that he thought the moves, if they make any, will be somewhat muted to where they're not going to, you know, each time they meet, raise it, you know, another 50 basis points. So, Jeff, give us your thoughts from the bond guy's perspective on what we should expect.
Well, I think to sum it up, the Fed is trying to keep the faith. We have these periodic setbacks like we did in the first quarter. Luther covered the conflicting economic news, which whenever that happens, the Fed has to take a step back. That's exactly what they did. You know, they met actually I guess it was last week, April 29th, and they didn't have a press conference after this meeting. All they did was release the minutes. And in the minutes, they continued to talk a good game, saying that they think the economy is going to get much better. They think that inflation will start to tick up. They think that that wages will start to improve and that unemployment will continue to decline. But they're going to be patient, and they want to see the evidence of that first. And although we've had some pieces of that puzzle, we really haven't seen everything fall into place. So I think that the September is the most logical timing for the first increase. You have to take the Fed at their word to some degree, although they have a history of not following their own advice sometimes. But you have to take them at their word, and everything seems to be pointing to that September time frame, that September meeting. The other thing that makes September a logical choice is that that is the next meeting that they actually have a scheduled press conference. And for the Fed wonks out there, that's an important factor, because that gives them the opportunity to meet, release minutes, and then also hold a press conference to explain what they did and why they did it, which, unlike the meeting we just had, and the meetings in between now and September, they really don't have much of an opportunity to make that explanation. So September seems to be the logical choice, but I agree with Greg. I think it's going to be a very slow, methodical march to higher interest rates until they really start to see inflation, which right now is running way below their target. The March number was somewhere around 1.3%, and they want 2% inflation, so we can't even get to the inflation rate that they're looking for. So the Fed's going to have to take it slow.
Luther, I'm going to ask you the same question, but with a little different twist. Do you agree with September? Do you agree, you know, somewhat slow pace on raising rates? But the little twist is you talked about second quarter GDP being between 2 and 3%. Let's say that number comes in at 1. Do you believe that, you know, the Fed is kind of on a mission that we're getting off of this zero interest rate policy? Or if you have that kind of quarter, do they maybe take a step back and say, well, maybe the timing's not right? So both scenarios, if they hit your 2 to 3%, and then what if they don't?
They don't. If we hit the 2 to 3%, then I think what Jeff and Greg has mentioned is correct. Somewhere around September, rates will start to go up. If we get a 1% increase in GDP, I think to a certain extent all bets are off, and we may have to push the rate increase back later. However, I think the possibility of a 1% is relatively low. Given all the underlying data that's coming out now, it seems like we are going to have a rebound, and I think to a certain extent, as you mentioned, the Fed is desperate is not the right word, but is very anxious to get rates off that zero and get rid of the zero interest rate policy or ZERP, try to get rates back up to, you know, 1 to 2%, just so that they have cannon fodder in case, for whatever reason, we do slip back into a recession in a year or two, that they have the ability to lower interest rates to start to stimulate the economy. So I think there's a big impetus to get rates up, but they are, as mentioned, data dependent, and they don't want to raise rates too soon. But I think even the slightest sign that things are getting a little bit better would be enough for the Fed. For example, the employment cost index just came in, along with the GDP numbers, and that number was at 2.6%, up from 2.2%, with the private sector up 2.8%. So we are beginning to see some very early signs of employment or wage inflation, and I think if that starts to pop up, then the Fed is going to be much more willing to raise interest rates at an earlier time period.
Jeff, you agree with that? 1% second quarter GDP? Maybe there's a pause or further waiting?
I think 1%, I'm again, like Luther, I see that as a low probability, but if it's surrounded with some weakness in employment, yes, they by their own admission claim to be data dependent, so that would clearly be something that would give them a pause. At this point, it looks like second quarter is likely to be a snapback, not another real flat quarter, so I think that's kind of unlikely. And Luther mentioned a number that's important to the Fed, that employment cost index, which is the primary wage inflation gauge that the Fed uses. And that 2.6% number that Luther quoted, that's a six-year high. So clearly things are moving in the Fed's direction, although slowly. And the Fed is watching that and is very concerned, and they want to make sure that they are ahead of the curve with unemployment being so low, even with the factoring in the participation rate and that sort of thing. We are starting to see some signs of employment inflation or higher wages, and you know that's the number one factor in inflation when it comes to all the components that create an inflation rate of any sort. So the Fed's watching that very closely.
Well, you know, the Fed's moves have a bigger impact on the shorter end of the curve. In the month of April, we saw the 10-year Treasury begin to rise from month end to month end. It went from 192 to 203. And, so far into May, we've seen probably another 10 basis points or so up to, I think we're around 215 on the 10-year now. Is that gradual rise in rates a function of inflation or what the Fed may or may not do? Give us a little color on what's going on in bond markets. And is it a trend or is it just normal trading range for the 10-year?
Well, at this point, it's normal trading range. We've been back around this 2.2% on the 10-year. a couple times in the last year or so. So actually, we're still below where we were the latter part of last year. But we're at the top of what I consider to be the trading range. What's different this time and what precipitated the decline in rates early on this year was, of course, we saw rates dropping pretty dramatically in Europe around the end of around the end of 2014, beginning of 15, because they were implementing their quantitative easing. Well, fast forward, Europe has implemented their quantitative easing. Their interest rates dropped dramatically, which more or less drug our interest rates down with them. But what we've seen recently and what's causing this rise in rates, more so than what's happening inside our borders, is what's happening around the world, and that is we're starting to see some pickup in Europe. We're starting to see some modestly higher interest rates, the German bond being the primary gauge on the international scene that people watch for bond or governmental interest rates. So those rates have started to move up. We've even had some icons in the industry have called the German bond, you know, the most overbought, overpriced bond in his lifetime. So you're seeing people calling a bottom to rates in Europe, and that's part of the dynamic that's brought rates higher here recently. Whether we see rates moving dramatically higher from here, as I said, we're still in that trading range at this point. But there does seem to be some bias towards rates continuing to drift modestly higher as the Fed moves towards their first increase in almost 10 years.
What about either corporate bonds or municipal bonds? Are they pretty much moving in line with what we're seeing happen in the Treasury market?
Corporate bonds have moved in pretty much lockstep with the Treasury market so far. Corporate spreads have not widened. Of course, what you would expect is with an improving economy like we have now, that corporate spreads would typically be fairly stable because corporate quality should be getting better as an economy improves. So we're kind of following the textbook line right now. Spreads have been fairly stable. On the municipal side, rates haven't moved to the degree that treasuries do. They always tend to lag, and that's kind of where we are now. But all three markets, treasuries, corporates, and municipals, have a bias to the upside in terms of interest rates right now.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. And we're almost right at 9:30, so I think we'll go ahead and end the call there. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we look forward to joining you again next month. Our call will be Tuesday, June 2nd. Thank you.